K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, fill us in. Where are you joining from?
Incredible India. And so I wanted to share something that really struck me, a major difference between here and the US. And it directly connects to our show. So, you know, we call our show The Choice Is Yours because as Americans, we truly have an abundance of choices when it comes to consumption. You know, you can shop at an organic store, at a regular supermarket, at a discount chain, you know, the ones like Grocery Outlet or Winco. For example, for your bread, you could choose to make it at home with the flour of your choice. You could buy the local brand, the gluten-free, the corn-free, the cheap white bread, the seeded one, you have so many choices. You could also decide to spend a lot of money or just a little money. You could order online. You could buy in stuff bulk. You could buy packaged item. Or you could also go to Costco and stock up and then keep your food in your cupboard, your fridge, or your freezer.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, all the choices we have.
Yeah, right? And in India, well, probably also in many other lower income countries, people simply don't have those choices. There's usually one type of small shop here, and they all carry roughly the same products. No organic section, no gluten-free aisle, no fragrance-free alternative, no certifications. Yesterday, I went to buy laundry detergent, and there was literally one option available.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. So our ability to choose is actually really a privilege.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as Western consumers, we maybe sometimes forget that having so many options is a privilege. And the freedom to choose what we consume, how it's made, what it's in, how much we spend, it is not universal. So now I'm thinking, you know, it's like if we have that privilege, the question becomes, how are we using it?
Well, the choice is yours. And yeah, it's super interesting. Thanks for sharing that, Doro. It's really good food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely easy to take for granted all the consumption choices that we have here in the U.S. So that's, you know, a great reminder what a privilege we all have here living in the States. And yes, when we are able, let's choose wisely.
And that's partly why we're doing this show, because we have so many choices that sometimes it is hard to choose wisely. Last month, we talked about coffee, a perfect example of an item you can get in so many different forms and brands.
Yeah. So first, we're going to recap what we talked about last month. Then we're going to talk about coffee houses, an increasingly popular way to drink coffee in the U.S. And it has its own impacts, you know, on environment and health and on people and culture.
But yeah, we're also here to remind you that we are not investigative journalists and we did not go and survey coffee farms all over the world. We are only, that sounds really like a great time.
Yeah.
But we are only spending time on the internet trying to find some reliable sources and telling you what we find.
All right. So we invite you to go and listen to our last show about coffee. It is on K-Mud Archives, but it's also on your favorite podcast app. But here is a little recap of what happened last month.
All right. So the coffee plant, it's very similar to a huckleberry bush, we had said, where the cherries, they are the harvested part.
Coffee is originally from Ethiopia, but is grown everywhere in the tropics. The biggest producers are Brazil and Vietnam. Only two varieties are grown, the Arabica and the Robusta.
Up to 3 cups a day, it is considered a healthy drink. Cool. It can protect against chronic disease, boost brain function, and aid weight management. But as we all know, excessive intake or improper timing, like if you take it too late, it can lead to sleep issues, anxiety, or digestive discomfort.
Yeah, 125 million people depend on coffee for their livelihoods. And of that group, 71% live in poverty. They virtually are all Black, Indigenous, and people of color.
Forced labor and child labor are still very present in this industry, especially in Brazil.
Yes, very sad. And then Folgers and Dunkin's, they're the most consumed brands in the U.S., and they show absolutely no interest in certifications and sustainability whatsoever.
Conventionally grown coffee is one of the most chemically treated beverages on the market.
For example, in Brazil, a study found traces of 24 different pesticides in the waterways right next to the coffee plantations. Some of it carcinogenic to humans and obviously extremely toxic to aquatic life.
Wow. Yeah, and climate change has already impacted, it's impacting coffee plantations, for example, in El Salvador, but it is bound to get worse.
Shade grown coffee is the best for the environment. And it is because it's a sustainable agro system.
Yeah, and we found that the Smithsonian Bird Friendly Certification is one of the absolute best that you can look for. And then we also found that the Fair Trade Certificate cannot always be trusted.
The ideal would be to buy coffee that is direct trade, shade grown, zero deforestation, organic, and living income.
All right, that's what happened last month.
So coffee's role in human history, it goes far beyond a morning ritual, everyone. It helped shape modern work culture. So caffeine, you know, this is the main psychoactive compound. It stimulates the central nervous system, temporarily reduces fatigue. It increases alertness, focus, memory, and our task endurance. And these are all essential for efficient work performance in cognitively and physically demanding jobs.
There's a connection between coffee and industrialization started in the 18th century. Okay, before that, imagine that the workers were mainly working in agriculture, so they were aligned with the natural daily rhythm. You know, they'd work from sunrise to sunset. But historians note that coffee quickly became indispensable during the Industrial Revolution because it helped the workers transition to this kind of clock time factory life. Mm. And workers would take short, frequent coffee breaks instead of longer meals, allowing production to continue with fewer interruptions.
This shift was more than a change in drinks. It underpinned a new work culture. Coffee enabled factory owners to expect higher output and greater discipline because caffeinated workers were more alert and engaged.
And also in the 17th and 18th century England, coffee houses were hubs for conversation, commerce, and information exchange. They were often referred to as penny universities because for the price of a cup of coffee, people could engage in political, scientific, and economic debates. And according to cultural historians, this environment helped fuel enlightened thinking by facilitating this discussion and critical thought and the spread of information. So these elements that are foundational, you know, then to the development of modern capitalist economies.
But then in the 20th century, the idea of the coffee break grew when employers realized that short caffeine-fueled pauses improved overall productivity. And some scholars argue that the coffee break is one of the clearest examples of how caffeine was institutionalized to boost labor output and their efficiency.
Well, I feel like if we have to live in capitalism now, we should at least get our coffee break, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's bring that back.
So historical research notes that coffee consumption alone didn't create modern work culture, but it did become, you know, a key component for the machinery of industrial and capitalist production.
Nowadays, it's not even during the coffee break that we consume coffee, but it is on the go.
Yes. So in the hustle and bustle of American life, coffee is often consumed on the go in a disposable paper cup. And this grab-and-go culture, this is so deeply ingrained in the U.S.
But you know, the habit of sipping coffee on the run is totally foreign in many other countries. Around the world, coffee isn't just a quick fix. It's like a ritual, a social connection, a chance to relax and reset.
According to the National Coffee Association, nearly 64% of Americans drink coffee daily, and quite a lot opt for takeaway options.
Yeah, even if 80% of the coffee is drunk at home, more than half of Americans order coffee at a coffee shop weekly or more often, and 8% order it daily. However, this is only, it's going to decline apparently soon because the cost of a cup is increasing, has increased by almost a quarter in the last 3 years.
Wow.
And you can see it in the sales of Starbucks that has decreased in 2024 and 25.
Mark Pendergrass, he's the author of Uncommon Grounds, The History of Coffee and How It Transformed Our World. He says that in America, coffee has become just another item on a checklist. We've lost the sense of ritual and relaxation that coffee can bring. So in other words, you know, coffee has gone from this ritualistic, you know, ceremony to just turning into a necessity in our daily lives.
In stark contrast, many countries around the world treat coffee as a social ritual, a reason to sit down and connect with others. For instance, in Italy, coffee is practically a religion. Italians take their espresso seriously, and the idea of taking it to go is about as popular as instant coffee. Italians prefer to savor their espresso while at a bar, engaged in lively conversation.
And in France, the café, it's a cultural institution where historically, you know, the philosophers, the artists, but also ordinary people, they go and gather at the café.
And in Turkey, you know, coffee is steeped in tradition. It's brewed slowly. It's served unfiltered. It's often accompanied by a glass of water and, you know, like a Turkish delicacy. In Turkey, they may even predict the future based on patterns left in the coffee grounds.
Nice. you know, in Japan, apparently the slow coffee movement has taken hold. This movement emphasizes taking the time, once again, to brew and enjoy your coffee, focusing on the quality and not on the quantity. Japanese coffee shops often serve hand-dripped coffee, brewed with the kind of precision and care usually reserved for the tea ceremony.
In Ethiopia, the birthplace of coffee, the coffee ceremony is a time-honored tradition. This process involves roasting, grinding, and brewing coffee beans, which can take hours.
And these are just a few examples. You know, as the global coffee culture illustrates, there is something inherently valuable about taking time to enjoy your cup of coffee.
Hey, but we got to say as well that in the state too, especially, you know, now there are the specialty coffee shops that focus on the quality and the experience of drinking the coffee are becoming increasingly popular, you know, taking your time. And maybe that is signaling a cultural shift.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. James Freeman, he's the founder of Blue Bottle Coffee in Oakland. He says that the we're too busy culture could definitely benefit from some real face-to-face social time, and that would benefit both our health and our souls.
Recent data published by foot traffic monitoring company Placer.ai reflected both the growing taste of U.S. consumers for coffee and the increasing portion of sales going to smaller entrepreneurs in the field.
One reason for that appears to be that bigger chains remain the choice of consumers preferring to quickly pick up their orders and be on their way. By contrast, the smaller businesses are luring and expanding numbers of people seeking the more traditional pleasures of settling in and slowly sipping their coffee.
In recent years, the coffee shop industry has changed, you know, with this increasing demand for specialty coffee and these unique cafe experiences people are looking for.
So it may be changing a bit, but Starbucks and other big chains still dominate the market.
Yeah.
They control a large share of the green coffee trade, and they are generating massive revenues from branded products and cafes.
And by the way, do you know that Alfred Peet, the founder of Peet's Coffee, was a mentor who taught the original founders of Starbucks how to source and roast coffee beans? The Starbucks founders spent time working and learning at Peet's original store. With Peet's blessing and guidance, they opened the first Starbucks in Seattle in 1971, initially stocking and selling Peet's roasted coffee beans, and purchased Peet's Coffee in 1984 when Peet wanted to focus on his passion for coffee and not for business.
Wow, that's interesting. And also about Peet's, Peet's Coffee announced in 2022 that 100% of their coffee is now responsibly sourced. So, En Veritas is a nonprofit that does studies in the name of the coffee brand. And it says that Peet's is currently operating 39 social and environmental impact programs at the farm level to help them achieve 100% responsible sourcing status.
That is super cool, because a large brand like Peet's, I think they have like 300 stores, especially on the West Coast. If they are making steps to improve the ways coffee is produced, particularly its effects on those working at the farms, we're going to talk about that a little bit after, that can have a significant impact. So thanks, Peet's.
Yeah, it's like, way to go. It's nice when you see big corporations step it up.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is Starbucks. So we're going to, there are local coffee shops and then there's big corporate chains, and we're going to talk about the differences here. So local independent stores, they often source from small or regional roasters. They may have direct trade relationships with the farmers. Staff can usually tell you the origin, the variety, and the processing method of the beans.
They tend to focus on freshness and small batch roasting, and baristas may dial in espresso daily. Sometimes they can do more experimentation with single origin beans and brewing methods.
And because they're local, your money tends to circulate within the local economy. And, you know, often those places create neighborhood gathering spaces. And also, okay, the labor practices, they may vary. I'm not saying it's perfect everywhere, but at least it's way more visible. In a small community, people would know if the staff is not treated correctly in their little coffee shop.
Yes. And then there's Starbucks.
As of November 2022, Starbucks has nearly 36,000 stores in 80 countries, 16,000 of which are located in the U.S., It's the world's largest coffee house chain. Starbucks has a 40% market share in coffee shops in the United States, followed by Dunkin's at 26%, Dutch Bros at 3%, and other chains at 31%.
So we're obviously, you know, we're going to tell you some horrible things about Starbucks. But before, raise your hand if at least once in your life you enjoyed going to Starbucks.
I'm raising two hands.
How many hands are
there? CC in there. I see you raising a hand too.
Okay, so out of the four of us, that three of us who had their hands raised. So, hey, we also have to say and to recognize that if Starbucks has become what they are, it's also because they're just doing a good job at what they do. You know, we all enjoyed those comfy seats and the reliable taste. I know that's important for my husband, for example. The openness of the staff to all the crazy drink specificities you could ask. They're ready to do anything you want. And also the Wi-Fi. I mean, they're just good as an overall consumer experience.
And that's kind of what they pride themselves on too, is this like reliable, replicable environment. And the CEO and the Starbucks mentality calls it this third place, which is an environment that is not your home, your first place, or your work that's your second place, but it's this third place that is recognizable. There's community there. It's a comfortable space for you to be in and to be inviting, but that every Starbucks has this same atmosphere.
You know, I don't even drink coffee, but when I was in London, Starbucks was like the place to go to just chill, like chatting with your friends and to avoid the rain. And because they were not asking us to order another drink every 30 minutes like they would do in the pubs.
Okay, but the devil is in the details. So Starbucks sources 3% of the global coffee supply, aiming for consistency in their flavor profile. And then when you buy a Starbucks coffee anywhere in the world, they want it to taste the same. So then they emphasize, fair trade and ethical sourcing practices. But if fair trade is that all your coffee can shout about, then it probably isn't that special.
Yeah, learned that last show, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And there is this SCAA grading system. The Specialty Coffee Association of America established what's become the gold standard for specialty coffee grading, particularly for Arabica coffees. The system uses a 100-point scale. So there's the specialty grade, which is 80 to 100 points, and it's exceptional quality with distinct attributes and minimal defects. And then there's the premium grade, which is 70 to 79 points, and it's good quality with some distinctive characteristics. There's the exchange grade, which is 60 to 69 points. It's average quality and suitable for commercial applications. There's then the below standard grade, 50 to 59 points, which is low quality coffee with noticeable defects. And off-grade, which is anything below 50 points, and it's very poor quality with numerous defects.
So your local coffee shop generally only roasts a specialty-grade coffee, which means that it's scoring 80 points or more out of the 100, you know, ensuring quality. And this is also the reason that you often won't see a fair trade sticker on their bags, because they pay a premium far higher for our coffee based on quality. And although Starbucks serves Arabica coffee, it isn't a specialty, and it could score anywhere from 0 to 100 on the quality scale.
And you know that coffee has 1,000 flavors compounds. It's actually four times more than for wine. And so really tasting the coffee should be the priority. And when you choose to go for an independent roastery, it means that you're embracing this richness and this complexity. But if you go to Starbucks, you go to the standardized taste.
Yeah, and to achieve the consistency that Starbucks offers, they roast the coffee darker to mask imperfections and variations in the coffee. This helps them achieve the signature Starbucks flavor. And the darker roast...
So that's the secret.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the darker roast also then ensures that the coffee can then cut through, you know, a 16-ounce milk latte with syrups and not get lost in all that milkiness.
Yeah, let's get into all that sugar and milkiness, huh?
Yeah.
According to the American Heart Association, it recommends the daily recommendations of levels of sugar, this is grams per day, are men with 36 grams, women 24 grams, and teens 20 grams of sugar per day.
Okay, so let's go over the sugar content in a few Starbucks drinks just for comparison, right? Okay, so the white, obviously we took the worst, but the white chocolate mocha has 46 grams of sugar.
Yikes.
The frappuccino, 53 grams of sugar. The mocha frappuccino, 60 grams of sugar.
Oh, no.
So, you know, that's about two or three times the daily, depending if you're a man or a woman, two or three times the daily recommended levels of sugar just in one Starbucks drink. That's crazy. That means you can't have the little piece of chocolate next to that. That's already too much. And even the sugar-free latte, it has 15 grams of sugar.
How can they call that sugar-free? That is insane.
I mean, I was on the website looking for some reasoning, but it's like no added sugar. And so they advertise it as sugar-free. But the baseline already has that much, which means all their drinks are like, you know, starting at that baseline of pretty much like 15 grams.
Yeah. So you might have the drink and then like crash immediately following.
I feel like why you get a big jolt and then it's a sugar high.
And then they need more. Everyone's like, I got to go
get
back.
Another one. It only takes 4 minutes when you go to a Starbucks. They have a 4 minute policy. You're in and out of there like quick.
Wow.
That
is wild. Okay. So here's the dark side, as well as the sugar, but we found some other problematic ingredients that are served at Starbucks. Okay. Pesticides. Uh-oh. Okay. This is from, you know, when it's grown, but this could also be pesticide traps for insects in the shops that then it's detected in the drink. The caramel color. I know. Scary. Caramel coloring is made with ammonia that's been detected, methylene chloride, dichloromethane. This has been identified in the Starbucks decaf house blend at levels deemed unsafe by the EPA. This is used as a decaffeination agent. Benzene has also been found in decaf coffee samples at levels significantly higher than EPA safety limits. It's like, how are they still in business? This is crazy. Toluene detected in decaf coffee. This is a solvent residue. Carrageenan, high fructose corn syrup, natural flavors, artificial flavors made with substances like check this out. And we've talked about this in past shows. Petroleum.
Yum.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
So in January of this year, a new class action lawsuit was filed against the popular coffee chain, alleging human rights violations and toxic ingredients in its coffee.
More specifically, that lawsuit says that Starbucks falsely claims 100% ethical coffee sourcing on its product, while investigations have found that it's... So, you know, they have a program, some program certified farms, and they are called Coffee and Farmer Equity, CAFE, CAFE, okay? So those farms, they have been found to force workers into dangerous conditions without proper protective gears, to live in unacceptable spaces with mold, vermin infestation, and a lack of proper water and sewage, as well as like many other offenses that violate local labor laws.
And one of the highlighted cases is that of the Mesas farm in Brazil, where 17 workers were rescued from modern slavery in August 2022. This group included three teenagers. They were working under the sun or the rain, and they were handling heavy loads. They were lifting coffee sacks that weigh 130 pounds. But this is just one example of many in those Starbucks certified farms.
Labor irregularities in the industry are not limited to Starbucks supply chain. Reporter Brazil, who did this investigation, has already exposed similar problems among suppliers of Nestle, McDonald's, and other companies that are major grain buyers.
In 2022, coffee farming was one of the top five sectors in terms of number of reports on workers' exploitation in Brazil. And in total, 39 coffee estates were inspected. And what did they find? 159 workers were rescued from modern slavery. So sure, Brazil is a big country, but anyway, there should never be 159 slaves. No, making coffee for us.
That is just horrific. And the suit against Starbucks also claims that independent testing done on the Starbucks decaf house blend, that medium roast, that they found volatile organic compounds. These are VOCs that include, the methylene chloride, benzene, and toluene. And according to the EPA, VOCs are gases emitted from many common liquids and solids, such as paints, cleaning supplies, and building materials, that can cause health issues like respiratory irritation, headaches, and nausea. So the testing found levels of all three VOCs that exceeded what the EPA has determined as safe. Therefore, the lawsuit alleges that the company's 100% Arabica coffee is misleading to consumers because it may expose them to unexpected chemicals.
We have to follow through with that lawsuit. I really want to see where it's going to go. That's cool. Yeah. And so if we're demanding sustainable coffee, it's not only, as you can understand, for our own health, but it's also because the coffee industry itself is at risk. Oh yeah, that's an important thing. So the increasing incidence of coffee leaf rust and other disease have also plagued the sector in recent times, while climate change is reducing the area suitable for cultivation. It is now recognized that the challenges faced by the coffee sector are dire and can only be faced with the development of sustainability initiatives intended to address the impacts of climate change, but also improve natural resource management, and also at the same time enhance the socioeconomic conditions of the coffee producers and their workers.
Another thing we want to touch on about Starbucks is the union story. 4 years ago, does anyone remember that?
Yeah. So the first, the first Starbucks store it voted to unionize. This was in Buffalo, New York. This was in December 2021. setting the stage for a wave of mobilization. It swept hundreds more stores across the nation. Starbucks workers united now represents 11,000 baristas at more than 550 Starbucks stores. So organizing Drive has become one of the highest profile unionization efforts in a generation in the United States.
Starbucks has actively fought unionization for decades, insisting its stores would operate best when executives at the company were able to work directly with its employees. They regularly argue that its employees don't need a union since it pays better wages and benefits than many other retailers. But the union is seeking better staffing, higher pay, and resolution for those hundreds of unfair labor practice charges that we just talked about.
And the story's dragged on for so long that many workers who voted in early elections in 2021, they've already left the company. Because, you know, most of the workers, they're young, maybe they're students, and they don't keep that job for that long.
So in November 2025, like a few months ago, more than 2,000 Starbucks employees were on the picket line again with a new slogan that was "No contract, no coffee." So what they mean is the union contract that they once signed with their employer Starbucks, right? So ahead of the strike, a wave of lawmakers, 26 U.S. senators and 82 congressional representatives, they signed letters to the current Starbucks CEO, demanding that the company reach a contract with the union. Big surprise, no Republicans signed those letters.
Of course.
But maybe you remember the images of Bernie Sanders and Zoran Mandani that went to support the striking workers.
Awesome. And then, you know, updated news, you know, the strike ended just a couple days ago on February 24th, and the workers were scheduled to return to work. Their needs were not met yet, but they expressed that they're going to continue to organize, they're going to canvass other Starbucks stores, and they're going to gain more support for the union and just keep, you know, working towards this.
Well, good luck to those workers. And once again, this situation highlights how large corporations can overreach their power, prioritizing profits over people and failing to fully embrace their social responsibility within society.
So now if we're talking about to-go coffee, which we definitely need to talk about, we need to talk about the cups.
The cups.
Yeah.
The bane of my existence, those cups.
Let's hear it, Doro. Tell us.
I mean, so many people still go to the coffee shop without their thermos. Come on, 2026, people, react.
Because around 63 billion disposable cups are thought to be used annually in North America alone. Roughly 90% of these cups are dumped in landfill sites since they cannot be recycled due to a thin layer of polyethylene film on the inside that makes the cups impermeable and heatproof.
Yeah, and there's an evident trend on the part of coffee shops that reflects the concern about cups, as these establishments are setting incentives such as discounts to those customers who bring their own cups, or alternatively charging customers to maybe a fee when they're not bringing or utilizing their own cups. But so far, it doesn't seem to be working that well.
And in 2024, Starbucks even started to accept reusable cups for their drive-thru and their mobile orders. So, okay, Starbucks is trying, so people need to try as well. I don't quite understand how you can bring your thermos to a drive-thru or to a mobile orders, but it's a cool idea. If you've tested it since, I think they started November 2024, if you've been to Starbucks drive-thru since then, tell us how that works.
Yeah, I'm imagining they like put it in a single-use cup and then at the window they like dump it into your thermos. Because how else do you make the sugar cookie vanilla frappe mocha cappuccino with, like, in 2 seconds? Anyways, I don't know the mechanics. Call us if you know how it works. But it is important as well to be aware of the hidden health risks that could occur due to exposure to microplastics while preparing your coffee at home or picking it up on the go. Common sources of microplastic single-use coffee pods, please, please don't use these. They are the worst.
They're the worst.
Or plastic water basins and automatic brewers, the plastic filter baskets and automatic brewers, plastic pour-overs or plastic coffee drippers, and plastic lids to coffee cups. There's just so much plastic that comes in contact with that heat.
And studies find that these materials can shed microplastic, which are then released into the coffee. And research suggests that long-term exposure to microplastic, which is the case of all humans on this planet now, and even more the ones who drink coffee in a coffee cup, we are all compromising our health. In 2024, researchers showed that patients with microplastic in their arteries had higher risk of heart attack, stroke, and early death.
Yeah, because they're so small, the microplastics are absorbed, they're carried by the blood to our vital organs, and lab studies of human cells and animals show that it's causing inflammation, oxidative stress, and immune disturbances. And these are the issues that then contribute to a variety of disease.
And hot water accelerates the release of microplastics and chemical leaching from plastic parts. Brewing at near boiling temperatures, like most of us do, can release up to 55 times more BPA into your drink.
Yeah, and then even the BPA-free plastics, they're not totally innocent because they're still releasing microplastics when heated and used. And, you know, it's not just about our own personal health because all of this plastic is ending up somewhere. You know, most plastic coffee gear isn't recyclable. So, you know, a surprising amount and will end up in landfills and then waterways and breaking down into smaller pieces. So it's not just, you know, in this cup then. It's in the soil, the ocean. It's even in the air.
At home, you can look for brewing tools that are not made with plastic, that are made with non-reactive materials like, I don't know, ceramic coffee drippers, stainless steel French press. Apparently, you can even have the stainless steel coffee pods, glass cold brew makers. You know, they are safer, they are more sustainable, they are less expensive in the long run. And so when you go for your to-go coffee, bring your own reusable cup. And same, you can go with the thermos, like we were saying, but you can also just have a cup that you used yesterday and reuse it today. Like Danny. Danny always have like 3 cups in her car just waiting.
I have about 4 right now, so you know me very well. Recent studies have uncovered evidence that disposable beverage containers release thousands of plastic particles into hot beverages, adding concerns about plastic accumulation in human tissues. Research from China Jilin University reveals that single hot beverage might contain thousands of microplastic particles with concentrations varying by cup type and temperature.
And testing of 90 commercial disposable cups showed sustainable plastic debris release with polyethylene-coated paper cup that released between 600 and 6,000 particles per liter. Okay, what does that mean? Scientists at the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur, they published a research estimating that the average person could consume over a lifetime by daily use of single-use plastic cup, a quarter of a cup of microplastic exposure. That's not so micro anymore. It's a quarter of a cup in your body.
Yeah, in your body. Jeez. And these findings, they definitely take on new significance given recent discoveries from UNM. Researchers found microplastics accumulating in the human brain tissue at concentrations of almost 5,000 micrograms per gram. This is significantly higher than levels that were found in other organs like the liver and kidney.
And additionally, recent work by Elaine Behrer, MD and PhD, and her team at the UNM Alzheimer's Disease Research Center identified microplastics in brain tissue from dementia patients after she noticed unusual brown particles that couldn't be identified with standard methods. She used special techniques to confirm that these were microplastics and connected with other scientists in her field who are also seeing more and more of these brown particles.
Yeah, so that's a lot to take
in
everyone.
Brains.
Yeah. So, you know, this is really serious. We're going to take a little turn right now and talk about some of the good news. The EU is stepping up. The EU has a single-use plastics directive. It came into effect of July of 2021, aiming to reduce pollution from disposable plastics And it bans specific plastic items where sustainable alternatives are readily available.
However, the paper cups with some plastic lining have not been fully banned EU-wide yet.
Ooh, okay.
Instead, measures focus on reducing their use, promoting alternatives, and introducing extended producer responsibility, where companies must pay to manage waste.
Some countries like Germany, they require beverage vendors to offer the reusable cups at the same or lower price than the single-use options. That's very cool. That should be encouraging a shift to reusable drinkware.
Yeah, very cool. Starbucks Europe rolled out a home compostable and widely recyclable cup made with fiber and a mineral-based coating instead of plastic.
And in the U.S., Starbucks began replacing this clear single-use plastic cold drink cups with fiber-based compostable cold cups in select stores across 14 states to comply with local laws banning plastics. These cups are opaque and made from fiber-based paperboard with bioplastic lining, and the lids are also compostable, but they are not the same as the ones in Europe because...
Because Europe's stronger and more widespread recycling and composting system make it easier to introduce a widely recyclable or home compostable cup. You know, in France or in Spain, for example, the green waste, the food waste, is now collected and composted. Like when I'm at my mom, I just bring the waste to a little box, and this is used in agriculture by biodigesters to create energy. And it's everywhere in France now. And in Spain, same. It's everywhere. You just have containers where you bring your food waste. So now you can put your Starbucks cup in that compostable container. Cool. But we're far from that in the States, right?
Yeah, so far. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning as well, Ginger. Loving the show as always. I just want to throw out there that Danielle is right. If you go to Starbucks with your own cup, which I like try to never do unless I really have to go to the bathroom, then I might stop at Starbucks and ask for something. But I bring my own cup, and they will make it in a plastic cup and then pour it into your cup every single time.
I knew it. I knew it, those little weasels.
Because yeah, and then how else do you do plastic? It?
I mean...
Yeah, then your drink's got now the microplastics in it, too.
Yeah, so I personally think Starbucks is lame.
Agreed.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I support my local coffee shop, so appreciate your show. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, they may be lame, but they have bathroom. And sometimes...
Well, let me make a comment on that, because that was part of their third place policy, was they had this open door type of thing and that you could go use the bathroom. They are now changing that as of last year. They're just having restrooms for customers, and it's becoming more of like a privileged customer base. That's what they're catering to now, instead of trying to make it this communal space. And because there was a lot of drug use in the bathroom, there was too much chaos happening of too many bodies in the space. And so they're really paring it down to just paying customers. So have to find a new bathroom stop on road trips and things.
Well, yeah. You should go to your independent little coffee shop. They have a bathroom too.
Totally. And I bet you it's nice and clean, and it's taken care of by a small group of local people that is not just, you know, underpaid corporate staff that's unhappy with their jobs. So, and we want to support independent local cafes.
Always.
And we love that they are transparent about their sourcing and committed to fair labor and environmental responsibility. So we got to support that and be mindful of large chains with documented human rights and environmental concerns, and make informed decisions wherever you're going to spend your money and use the bathroom.
And think about what goes into your coffee. Many popular drinks are loaded with added sugar, like we said, but also those flavored syrup. We've talked about it before. Those natural flavor, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean it's natural. It hides, like, I don't remember what was the number, maybe a million different things can be in this natural flavor. So those syrup are bad news. Also, the ultra-processed creamers, the artificial additives that can totally weigh outweigh your coffee's potential health benefits. So the more you mask the coffee, the more you move away from its natural qualities. Sometimes the healthiest and most sustainable option is just the simplest one.
Yeah, and you know, like we said, it's a small action, but it adds up when we all bring our own reusable cups. So whenever you can do that, go for it.
And slow down. Let's savor the smell. Let's learn about the origins of the beans and ask questions. Maybe the owner has a direct relationship with the farmers. Most likely they do. And refine your taste for quality, because it is a quality beverage. And enjoy the atmosphere. Have a conversation and relax.
Because in the end, coffee isn't just about energy. It's about awareness. And the choice is yours.
Awesome. Well, thanks, ladies, so much. Thanks, Cece, so much
thanks,
for
Cece,
being our engineer.
Thanks, holding it down for us.
Yep.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.